Good morning and welcome to the Justice Report Weekend Review for June 6th to 15th, 2024. As always, we'll be hopping around the globe to examine this week's top headlines from places like Germany, Sweden, and the United States. We'll also be zooming in on a number of systemic injustices affecting the white community and list the names of people suspected of carrying them out. All this and more, only on the Weekend Review. First, we'll be headed to Stockholm, where one nationalist group, known for its opposition to the genocidal state of Israel, has officially earned it a terror designation from the U.S. State Department.
This is the audio edition of the Justice Report's exclusive article, first published on June 14, 2024. Today's story. Zionist U.S. State Department designates the Nordic Resistance Movement as a terrorist group. Stockholm, Sweden. The European white nationalist organization, the Nordic Resistance Movement, has been designated an official terrorist organization by the United States, officials say. The U.S. State Department, run by Jewish Secretary of State Antony Blinken, also named the NRM's governing National Council as terror leaders seeking to, quote, harm the security or economy of the United States. The United States remains deeply concerned about the racially or ethnically motivated violent extremist threat worldwide and is committed to countering the transnational components of violent white supremacy, read the State Department's website. Today, the Department of State is designating Nordic Resistance Movement as a specially designated global terrorist or SDGT, it continued. The NRM, a pan-Scandinavian nationalist group that rejects American neoliberal values such as Zionism, pro-homosexual indoctrination, and anti-white hate, is said to maintain branches in Norway, Denmark, Iceland, and Finland, where it has been officially banned since 2020. The NRM asserts it will one day unite the ethnic Nordic people under one banner after the peaceful overthrow of the current Western-imposed order. In addition to the group itself, three NRM leaders were named by the U.S. State Department as SDGTs, which included parliamentary head Per Öberg, Swedish coordinator Leif Robert Eklund, and Tor Fredrik Weideland, a 20-year NRM veteran and current head of the National Council. With this designation, the men named, as well as NRM's rank and file, are no longer permitted to travel to or within the United States. Additionally, the statement says that U.S. citizens are now legally barred from financially supporting the group. These designations are part of a broader U.S. government effort to address the transnational dimensions of the threat posed by REM-V actors and reflect the Biden-Harris administration's continued commitment to countering domestic terrorism, which includes REMV, read the statement. In a rebuttal made to its official media pages, the Nordic Resistance Movement called any attempts to smear the group and its figures as terrorists completely absurd, as well as posting a series of promotional images, including one which asked, "What separates a terrorist from a freedom fighter?" While the U.S. State Department appeared to cite journalistic evidence of NRM's so-called violent tactics to reach the decision, many online quickly pointed towards the group's documented history of peaceful anti-Zionist activism as the root cause. The Nordic Resistance Movement, based out of Sweden, has just been designated a terrorist organization by Jewish Antony Blinken's U.S. State Department, read a post by Henrik Palmgren of Red Ice TV to an audience of over 90,000 on X, formerly Twitter. Totally insane and shows you 100% that they are more concerned about white advocacy than any actual criminal networks, terrorism, or pedophile rings. Targeting NRM as a terrorist group is unserious and baseless, asserted independent journalist Joseph Jordan on social media. The U.S. government is a toddler walking around with a loaded gun, except corrupt, since this decision was made as a favor to Jewish political donors. Others pointed towards the ethnic makeup of the U.S. State Department itself as a potential indicator as to why a pro-white group like NRM would face sanctions on a geopolitical scale. The U.S. State Department, under Zionist traitor Antony Blinken, just declared the Nordic Resistance Movement a terrorist organization, read nationalist podcaster Warren Bayog, also on X/Twitter. This is an outrageous abuse of power by ethnic Jews loyal to Israel to criminalize a legal political party. In recent months, the NRM has remained a staunch opponent of the embattled regime in Tel Aviv. In October, the group staged a defiant protest in Stockholm's city center, holding green and black banners that read, "Crush Zionism." In a statement made around the same time, they called the self-defense of the Palestinian people an inalienable right and stood in solidarity with those physically resisting Jewish power overseas. Just as we are fighting here at home, under the prevailing conditions and circumstances, for a new and free Nordic nation, we wish the Palestinian people all the best in their struggle for a new and free Palestine, the statement read. While the NRM has received national attention for its efforts in spreading awareness of Israeli war crimes, which included a boycott campaign of Israel itself, its opposition to Zionism has existed long before the events of October 7th. Anti-Zionist activity may not be the sole motivating factor behind their latest terror designation, however. According to Bayog, the hand of Blinken's State Department may have been forced after Israel's notorious West Bank settler militia Tzav 9 also faced American sanctions. The Jews at the state debt were forced for optics reasons to sanction an actual Israeli terrorist org, so they took the opportunity to balance it out by placing a legal anti-Zionist political party in Sweden on the same list. Outrageous, he said on X/Twitter, for the state debt to criminalize NRM at the same time it actively supports and defends the ongoing mass murder of defenseless men, women and children in Gaza and the West Bank reveals the extent to which our entire foreign policy has been hijacked by the Israeli Fifth Column, he continued. Those who dissent against the Zionist status quo have long faced stiff opposition from local, state and federal governments, with oppression striking on both sides of the political spectrum. In 2023, a white man was arrested, harassed, smeared, and had his firearms confiscated after New York State police found a series of nationalist stickers at Albany University. Some of them were openly critical of Israel and read, "Resist Zionism." The law used to prosecute the individual was later deemed broadly unconstitutional, but character attacks from local Jews and rabbis stoked undue financial precarity to this day. In 2024, Jewish advocacy groups, billionaires, and Israeli-sponsored politicians have collectively flexed their might against pro-Palestine leftists, especially on U.S. college campuses. Additionally, both the Israeli and U.S. federal governments have gone on to designate anti-Semitism as an extant national security threat and have linked peaceful anti-war sit-ins to modern-day gas chambers. For more news like this, visit justicereport.news and subscribe to our Telegram, Substack, and Odyssey to keep up to date on all the latest headlines from around the world.
Stories of the government's ongoing quest to brutally silence even mild criticisms of Israel continue to dominate the headlines. Up next, we'll look at a once prominent racial institution now forced to bend the knee.
The NAACP, the oldest black civil rights organization in the United States, was forced to revise its statement on the Gaza conflict after calling for a permanent ceasefire and the suspension of American weapon shipments to Israel, to instead specify that they only want to halt the shipment of weapons, quote, targeting civilians. We didn't want folks to be confused as to exactly what we were calling for because we do respect the right for Israel to defend itself, said Alicia Mercedes, NAACP spokesperson. But we don't think American tax dollars should be going to bomb civilians. The Middle East conflict will only be resolved when the U.S. government and international community take action, including limiting access to weapons used against civilians, said Derek Johnson, NAACP chief executive. The revision follows scrutiny from the American Jewish community, with whom the NAACP has shared close ties to since its inception in 1909. Rabbi Jonah Pesner, head of the Religious Action Center of Reform Judaism and NAACP board member, expressed his disappointment with the statement, stating, "Many of us in the Jewish community are deeply disappointed in the statement on both process and substance in calling for an embargo for multi-use weapons at a moment when Hamas, Hezbollah, and Iran remain committed to Israel's destruction." "What would MLK do?" asked former ADL head Abe Foxman on X/Twitter. "Not this. Sad betrayal of your Jewish allies." The revision coincides with Israel's controversial hostage extraction operation, which massacred over 200 Palestinian civilians. Israeli soldiers infiltrated the Nuseirat refugee camp in Gaza by hiding inside a truck used for the delivery of humanitarian aid. According to Israeli journalist Barak Ravid, a special U.S. military unit specialized in rescuing captives, quote, supported the effort. The four hostages were subsequently airlifted out of Gaza through the reconstructed U.S.-built pier, which had undergone extensive repairs totaling tens of millions of dollars.
As America's domestic situation continues to unravel, corporate greed and malfeasance only seem to worsen. Our next story is a haunting and grim reminder of how little some companies care about their poorest yet most important workers.
This is the audio edition of the Justice Report's exclusive article, first published on June 11, 2024. Today's story. An unsafe Caterpillar foundry claims the life of yet another white father, Mapleton, Illinois. Yet another tragic injustice has befallen the white working class after unsafe policies killed a man at an industrial plant known for repeated OSHA violations. Emergency services were called to Caterpillar's Mapleton foundry after a reported fire at 5 p.m. on Thursday. The victim, identified as 28-year-old Dalton Simmers, died, quote, within a matter of seconds after he was wholly consumed by molten steel. Simmers, a young father, would be the third white man to die inside the unsafe Caterpillar foundry within recent years, sparking outrage across the nation. According to a police statement, Simmers died trying to transfer molten metal from a foundry into a smaller pot. While the Peoria County Sheriff's Department and the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, OSHA, are investigating the incident, many have already placed blame squarely on the shoulders of Caterpillar for failing to remedy many known safety issues. In June of 2022, white 39-year-old Stephen Dierkes was killed instantly after lax safety measures led to him falling into a crucible of molten iron with a temperature of over 2,600 degrees. Disturbingly, an autopsy report determined Dierkes' cause of death to be from what's called, quote, thermal annihilation. He was taking a sample of iron for the Met Lab and apparently just tripped. He died instantly, but not all of him went in, said a fellow Caterpillar worker to WSWSA the time of the incident. Part of his body remained on the deck for the coroner to retrieve. It must have been ghastly for those folks that witnessed it and to wait for the coroner with half of their coworker lying on the floor. A subsequent OSHA investigation determined Caterpillar failed to enact necessary measures to prevent the incident, and proposed a slap-on-the-wrist fine of just $145,000. The foundry routinely exposed employees to unprotected fall hazards as they worked within 4 feet of deep ceramic containers of superheated molten iron, said OSHA in a statement following Dierke's preventable death. A worker's life could have been spared if Caterpillar had made sure required safety protections were in place, a fact that only adds to this tragedy. In December of 2021, white 50-year-old Scott W. Adams plunged to his death after stepping off of a ladder at the same Caterpillar foundry, falling over 20 feet through an unforeseen hole in the floor. In that death, OSHA claimed basic fall prevention measures could have prevented the incident and would go on to fine both Caterpillar and Adams Contracting Company. The combined OSHA-imposed fines placed on Caterpillar would amount to nothing compared to the approximately $67.1 billion in revenue the megacorp took home in 2023, and in the case of the Dierke fine, the company would even contest it. Meanwhile, those close to Simmers remembered him for his selfless attitude, despite a life of hardship and struggle common with the white working class. "He was quiet, collected, an observer and thinker," said a friend of Simmers to WSWS. "We grew up on the south end of Havana, which is the poor end of a poor town. He only cared about a few things, which were being with his friends, settling down and having a family and taking care of them. There were a lot of people making bad choices and using drugs back then around us, even in his family, but he never participated," they continued. "Life was just starting to look up for him for once, and now it's over. He went to heaven for sure, not a fair shake by a long shot. Loving, family-oriented, and would help anyone if they needed it. The guy was a walking self-sacrifice, basically. A GoFundMe has been set up to assist the family during these times. While the fundraiser has already surpassed its initial $8,000 goal, all proceeds are said to be going to Simmers' fiancée, Lynn, and his surviving children. Me and the kids are lost for words and heartbroken right now. He was so great to us," said Lynn to WSWS. In the United States, the white working class continues to face the human cost of corporate greed made manifest. According to OSHA, over 50,000 workers are said to die from chemical exposures every year, with an additional 190,000 suffering from workplace illnesses linked to cancer and organ disease. The U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics asserts that there were over 500,486 fatal workplace injuries in 2022, a 5.7% increase from 2021. While the issue of blatantly unsafe work environments transcends race, it's white bodies that are being pulled out of Caterpillar's now infamous Mapleton foundry, referred to by some as a slaughterhouse. Caterpillar, a company known for its yellow-colored construction vehicles commonly seen on American roadways, is also known for cashing in on an intimate partnership with the Jewish State of Israel. The D9R bulldozer, one of Caterpillar's hottest commodities, is currently used by the IDF to carry out its ongoing war of extermination against the Palestinian people. According to a report by Forbes, the D9R can be outfitted with machine guns and grenade launchers, while other models, including Caterpillar's Frontrunners and Minicats, have been used by Israeli Jews to tear down Palestinian homes, schools, and roads. In some instances, they have even been used to carry out extrajudicial executions of innocent people. Caterpillar makes the D9 to military specifications and sells the bulldozers to Israel as weapons under the U.S. Foreign Military Sales Program, a government-to-government program for selling U.S.-made defense equipment, read a report on the D9R by Human Rights Watch. Once exported to Israel, the bulldozers are armored by the state-owned Israel Military Industries Limited. Weighing roughly 64 tons, the armored D9 is more than 13 feet tall and 26 feet long with front and rear blades. In 2009, Israelis used a Caterpillar D9 bulldozer to crush American pro-Palestine demonstrator Rachel Corrie during a direct action to prevent the demolition of a Palestinian home with the family still inside. Corrie's murder would later spark a campaign to raise awareness of Palestinian genocide and Caterpillar's alleged complicity. Alarmingly, it was later revealed that the company hired, quote, private surveillance firms to infiltrate the activist groups and even spy on the Corrie family. The tragic deaths of Dalton Simmers, Stephen Dierks, and Scott Adams amid a crumbling neoliberal empire represent only a smattering of workplace deaths that have occurred nationally. In March of 2023, electrical lineman Andrew Jacob Schwamm was killed on the job after a reckless sheriff's deputy sped through a work zone in Blount County, Alabama. A follow-up Justice Report investigation determined the identity of the officer involved after law enforcement hurriedly concealed information. Despite video evidence and eyewitness testimony that proved the officer was to blame for Schwamm's death, Republican Blount County Sheriff Mark Moon cleared his own department of wrongdoing and labeled his detractors as, quote, fake news. In April of 2023, two black gunmen were arrested for the racially motivated drive-by shooting of white handyman Lawrence Devin Herr in Kenner, Louisiana. During interrogation, one of the suspects had confessed to Herr's murder, stating that the two black men were driving around and, quote, just wanted to kill a white guy.
This concludes the free version of the Justice Report Weekend Review. Thank you for listening. To gain access to the full version of this recording, please consider becoming a paid subscriber to the Justice Report's website, Substack, or Odyssey channel, and keep up to date on all the latest headlines from around the world. Independent journalism is often a difficult, time-consuming effort, and every interaction, share, and financial donation you make in support of our efforts here at the Justice Report helps keep the wheels spinning at a time when fact-based information is constantly under attack. With no corporate paymasters or political interest groups funding our operation, we rely solely on the support from readers and listeners like you. Thank you once again. We'll see you next week.